off on the podcast on Keycard 2.0.
Check, 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 check. Does this thing work?
Yeah, I'm so excited. Welcome to my house.
I know, we get a little behind the scenes of your house, of your home studio here. It doesn't even look like you're way more professional though than most podcasters, most anyone. This is like ready for live television.
I just probably should do a podcast then. It's been a few months. Well, few months.
Actually, you know what? Okay, we'll start with that. I was going to ask you about that. I think the Fox 5 audience knows you. I mean, they know you anyway because you're a DC personality. We'll talk about that. But you also have Oh My Goff podcast. So yes. What's the status? I was going to ask you, are you putting out new episodes? What are you doing?
Yeah. So right now, of course, with COVID, we all had to change our game. And I think that there's a lot of things that we learned from it. And before, where I was on a schedule where I was going in every week and I had a production team and all that came to a screeching halt just because, for the most part, I mean, people didn't want to come in. Studios didn't want people in there because of that. Now we got this other new variant that's arising. So who knows how long that's going to go. So I figured while I'm at home, you know, why not just see if between Wayfair and Overstock and Amazon, if I could try to replicate and build it myself. So, you know, I want to be totally transparent. This is just wallpaper. It's not old brick. So it's not the same. Right. But this is the same.
Yeah.
But I think also through that transition, I and you've been podcasting for, you know, about 23 years.
Yeah. So
feels every bit.
No, it's been 5 years, but it feels like eternity. It's so long. Yeah.
But, you know, I'm a virgin at this. Like, this is something that was new I mean, everybody is now that COVID hit, like, everybody has a podcast. But for me, I think I just am taking time to really look at it and see what direction do I want to go. I kind of threw everything out on the wall. And now with all the changes, do I want to go back to more longer format? Because I was trying to keep it really strictly to a certain amount of time. And you get all these rules from people when you're starting out.
I know.
Keep it to 21 minutes. Do ads in the beginning. Keep it short. And I think now that I have that behind me, it's like, what do I really want to do?
Yeah.
Who do I really want to talk to? Who do I not want to talk to? And what is the real mission here and the real why for this? And the whole thing was, for me in the beginning, it was a creativity outlet. And I'm being totally selfish in saying that. I mean, why would you leave a great job like at NBC where it was pretty cush? I liked the people. I enjoyed it. I had a show there. But for me, I think the biggest thing that I've always struggled with in working in a corporate setting.
Oh, girl, you're preaching. Yeah, keep going.
And a news setting is that I've had to somewhat acclimate and maybe restrict myself.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people do. We all know a lot of people in news and we're like, God, you know, if they could be that person on the air, this show would be great. But again, you know, it's the nature of the business. So.
Okay. But I think that's fascinating because people that are listening to this are obviously our viewers, right? And they see you sort of like this beautiful big personality on TV. But it's interesting. Do you feel like your whole career, people have been trying to like put you in a box or tell you what to do or tone you down?
And I think that there's a certain...
Isn't that hard?
But there's a certain point. I think if I came right out of school out the gate and they were like, yeah, free reign, you know, let's just do whatever you want. Like, I would have been probably arrested. I probably would have, you know, I just wouldn't be here. I probably wouldn't. I needed that structure. And I think, and because of that, I will say, you know, I did some of my best work early in the days, you know, just, you know, feet to the fire, the reporting, you know, getting in, just, you do the hard work. And I think, you know, after time, you kind of get tired. You have some kids, you know, like 3 C-sections, and you're like, I have given enough.
C-section is rough. Yeah, it is rough. It's like not ruffle, it's happening, but the after is a lot of recovery.
I just think that at first I kind of needed that because I needed that discipline. I didn't really know what I was getting into. But at the end of the day, I think that it's a fine line. I think there is a way to still have credibility, still have passion for your job, and still be able to show who you really are and not be afraid of it. And I think for many years, I was afraid to show it. I was ashamed to show it. I felt bad. You know, I I double.
Could you just what? Thought
I
you were
questioned
too much?
Myself.
You thought it was
yeah,
just too
yeah,
much.
Just yeah. You know, the kids these days they'd say what extra? Like I was just too extra, maybe too extra for Sioux City, Iowa, and whatnot. But
you need to give it all. Give it your, but isn't that funny? But I bet you're a person in your career because we're gonna go back. Because I mean, I've known you for like 16 years. I mean, I knew you back in the day when you had this like fire blog when everybody was a blogger. And of course, you know now people make fun of everyone has a podcast, but back in the day it was everyone had a blog.
Yeah,
but. Tell me about, I mean, your personality lends itself, I feel like, have other people and been very jealous of you? Because you have this, a lot of news anchors, I mean, let's just face it, a lot of anchors, once they go off the teleprompter, they really don't know what to say. I mean, you're dynamic because you can improvise, which is sort of a gift in our business. And that's something a lot of people don't know. And it's something people, when they watch television, they go, well, why can't they talk to each other when they're off script?
Yeah.
Because it's kind of an art. So have people... Yeah. You being you and coming into Angie's Power, do you feel like a lot of people have been jealous or not?
Yeah,
with you well,
but I think there's other people that have been inspired by it as well. I can't tell you how many people when I left NBC reached out and was like, how did you do this? How did you go out? How did you do a show? I'm trying to talk with my bosses, with my news network about starting a podcast, but I too want a little piece of the pie. I want ownership. If I'm going to be tacking this on to the already three shows I'm doing, to the reporting I'm doing, to the fact that I'm at the mercy of the network or the mercy of the office, because we all know we work like, you know, barring breaking news, I mean, it's all hands on deck. Like we're like doctors, right? You know, you have to be ready anytime and you work holidays. It's very similar. I mean, we were considered essential workers during all of this. We never stopped working and with good reason, because we provide, I think, a very important service. And, but with that said, I think we are living in an age, just like every industry, where you are expected to do more with less, right? Yeah. I mean, that's just how the story goes. And from a business perspective, that makes absolute sense. But I think that if you are someone who is not just mailing it in, if you're not on autopilot, if you're not like over it or whatnot, and you really are putting in the work, you really are going that extra mile, and you really are taking all the freaking hits that come along with that, because it is, they say it's lonely on the extra mile, and it is, because the higher you go, We want to believe that you, my friends, my mom, my cousin, they're all going to be happy for us. They're all going to be in our corner. They're all rooting for us. That's not human nature. Okay. Like there's a lot that hides behind a lot of charismatic smiles and that's in every business. And so you have to be able to get to a point, to zone all that out. And stay focused on the task at hand. And I think the best advice, and I always tell this to people when they ask me for career advice, and I got it from John Kelly, who, a former football player, he worked for Extra. I don't even know what he's doing now. And I remember he told me this because I was complaining about a girl that had no broadcasting experience, and she was already doing something in the digital world, and it was taking off, you know. And this was in the 90s, and it was just – or not the 90s, but the early 2000s. And he's like, Anne, she's like, every second you spend obsessing, thinking about someone else, talking about someone else, you're taking it away from yourself. Like, and I was like, oh my God, time is money. You know, like Cardi B said, you know, and I, that was Saweetie. I'm getting my girls mixed up. Sorry, you know, but I charge by the second. And so it's things like that that kind of keep me going back, because it's so easy to be like, oh my God, what did they say about me? Just the other day, I'm at Tyson's Corner. Yeah. I'm walking out, and we all know what I look like when I'm not working. I don't wear makeup. I'm like in sweats. It's just, these two women, oh my God, it's Angie from Fox. Blah, blah. We love you. We watch you. And they go like, don't worry about the haters. And I was like,
how do you know I have haters?
I was like, yes. Oh, please tell. And I go, you know, but I looked at them and I was like, no, I don't. I was like, you know, I stopped worrying about them a long time ago. But it was really weird. I was like, oh, man, people are hating it. Maybe I should Google myself. I don't know. But that's the thing. And it sat with me for a second. And then I texted my friend Marina. I told my friend Marina, who I work with, you know, I was like, what do you think they meant? You know, and so it was just, it was really weird. I was like, do I need to do some digging? I figured, because this business is great, that when you do something, when you do fuck up or whatever, I don't know if we're bleeping these or not, but.
Oh, no, drop the F-bombs.
But
please.
I do. I cuss, too, okay? I got military dad, Korean mom, there's, like, no chance. Okay, so, yeah, I just, I lost my train of thought.
Well, you know, talking about do you pay attention to the haters? And these women had kind of, and you sort of, it kind of got to you for 1 second.
Oh, yeah, for 1 second.
And then
you
were like, okay, moving on.
I'm glad that you listened. Because I need that because I,
well, no.
I lose myself.
I hate being interviewed. I don't know if you do. Because I hate being interviewed. The interviewer.
Yes.
You and I, yeah. And so it's like, then when it's like turned on you, you're like, well, I don't know what to say. And like you were saying before the interview started, you're not that exciting. Neither am I. I mean.
Yes, you are.
No, it's not.
Yes, you are.
Let's go back because I love, you're a local girl born and raised here. Tell me. What, you have two sisters, so you grew up with three girls. Dad was military.
Yeah.
Mom is Korean.
South Korea Lina, baby.
Okay, South Korea Lina. So you were a mixed race child. How difficult was it growing up with a, I mean, we all love Chen, but you know, it's like, that's a strict mama.
Oh, yeah. She's tough. I try to tell my kids all the time. I'm like, you don't know Nana. Like, you don't, because they always tell me that their dad is their favorite. And I was like, yeah, my dad was my favorite too growing up. Read my diary. You know, it's just, but I was like, but later on in life, you will appreciate me. And I tell them that all the time because I'm viewed as the enforcer. I'm viewed as the one, well, actually, look, I mean, I have it framed because I wear this as a badge of honor. One day, Adora came home. I was pregnant with Ren. I remember laying in the bed. And she's like, Mom, I drew a picture of you. And she drew it on the bus.
And it's you and this, okay, it's an
I
angry.
Am, and the word bubble says, read it.
I am mad.
I am mad. Not yay.
And, it's
and then she wrote yay and crossed yay. She's like, but I gave you bunny slippers. So we know she has a heart, a little Sagittarius. And then, and she, furrowed brow. And then it's just this craziness that's going
this
on
hurricane
here.
Hurricane behind you.
And I was like, this is how my kids view it. And you know what? I'm okay with this. I'm okay with this because I just feel like there has to be, there's something to be said about having a healthy fear of your parents, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah,
I look back and I'm like, how did I not go astray when I so could have? You know, because I went through everything that everybody went to, like identity crisis, feeling like a loser, being left out, you know, from not being included.
And was this because you were like, you were Asian American, right? So was it?
Yeah, moving around a lot and being new. And so, but of course we get older. And my mom and I, we talk every day. We're so close. I realize these lessons that she taught me and her the tough love, as she would call it, it's really
okay, so
paid off.
What was tough love? Was it that you guys had to excel in school? You always had to be in sports. You had to be learning
an
instrument. Like, what was Angie Goff's childhood? Or was it, you know,
I mean,
you came home at 3 and then you guys could do what you wanted?
Yeah, no. No, I told Adora the other day, they're complaining. I only make them practice 15 minutes a day on their piano, if they do that, because sometimes I'm at work and then they lie to me. I had to play 45 minutes a day. My piano teacher would hit my hands. You know, this is in Korea. Like, if you messed up, and there was such a fear of not being good or not being perfect, right? You know, I played Beethoven's Fifth Symphony in the 4th grade talent show, okay? It's just,
my God.
And you were constantly competing against, you know, Christina Sappington. I remember her name, you know, because she was like always like one, you know, she could do
damn
moves.
You, Christina.
Yeah, the way you tickle those ivory keys. Where are you now? No, I'm kidding.
Television.
But she, her thing was, because this is a woman who, against her family wishes, gave up everything, her country, her language. When she met my father while he was serving in Korea, they didn't speak a lick of English. They used dictionaries
That's
literally
how
to communicate. Yes.
So
and probably some body language too.
I'm
sure that's not all that was happening, but yeah, and I mean, Chin might not tell you, but Ren would open up about that. But he knew he was going to, he tells you, and by the way, today is their 48th wedding anniversary, but they've been together 50 years.
They are so cute together.
I know. He wrote the nicest post on Facebook. So sweet.
And he's so in love with her.
We call him Saint Ren. I mean, he is a true saint.
He's given his life to you guys. You know, you can tell when you post pictures of your parents, you know, just how in love your dad is with you guys and proud of you. And I mean, it's amazing that their love story.
But he does remind us that she gave everything for us. Yeah. And that's why we are everything to her. That's why if I don't call Chin on the way to work, she's like, you don't miss me? You know, where are you? And it's just and that's because this is what she came for. And
you guys are her world. That's it.
That's it.
And she, I'm sure your parents sacrificed to see you, your sister's an entrepreneur, very successful.
Yes.
I mean, they did all that to see you guys. But at the same time, it's hard because there are negative effects to that, right? Like it's, you know, Yeah, you grow up with. Are you in therapy, by the way?
I mean, I've had life coaches and things like that. Yeah. And then, of course, during the big breakups and stuff, you're like, oh, I'm going to die, you know, and you need to see someone.
Before your Robert, we got to know who you were. Huh? Before Robert, there were some big breakups?
There's lots. There's so
really?
Many.
Oh, my God. I don't even remember.
There was just one big one. And then I just started to the men, like, mindset, like the man. And so I was like, I'm dating everybody, you know,
yes,
like, and so I was like, you know, I'm going to sample everything because now I know what I like, what I don't. And then I met him and he was great. And he will tell you, and I just want to go on the record, like, I did not stalk him, but he will, if you ask him, he'll tell you that I stalked him one night. I mean, I did go over there while I was on another date with someone and put my number in his phone and said, you should call this. But that wasn't really stalking. What? Okay. So,
have you told that story on air a lot? Because you, like I said, you're a tough interview. You revealed a lot. Really?
Yeah. I don't really talk about my real personal life.
Wait. Before we move on from your parents. So what's one amazing thing that you have that your mom has given you? And what's the biggest negative thing that you think she's given you?
The best thing that she's given me is... and I didn't realize it along, but it was self-worth. Chin has never doubted herself. She still calls herself Foxy. She's never she's never, you just don't, you know, she's like, I have skin like mocha. Like, she doesn't care if she didn't have makeup on. The self-confidence in her whole thing was, and now I see it, was, you will stay in here. You will practice your handwriting. Oh, you got an A-. Well, you got one more question right. You could have an A+. Like, you know, you don't know your potential, and you need to be able to stand on your own feet. And yes, I do want you. She's typical Korean mom. I want you to marry a doctor, a lawyer, and all that stuff. Like, she met Robert. I mean, and he was a dentist. She's like, doctor. Oh, he's gold. Yeah. And then she wanted to know if he had a brother for my little sister. Sorry, Chris. But I was like, no, he's not a doctor. He's a dentist. Haven't you seen The Hangover? Come on. But yeah. So she still wanted that. But her thing, I think it's because, and now that I look at it, it's because she gave up everything, right? You know, and is that she wanted us to be in a place where we could call the shots. And she wanted to know that we were going to be okay and we were going to have health insurance. You know, I think that that's what that generation, you know. And so for me, I think the self-confidence and knowing that, yeah, you're good, but you could be better, you know, like, don't settle. And I think that's what it came down to. It's like, because Chin does not settle. She does not settle. She likes to ride high in her Honda Odyssey. She likes somebody to drive her, you know, to get her.
Chin is headed to the casino.
Frappuccino.
She looks great. I mean, she does full makeup, hair. What's been the downside? Has it been anxiety? Because you can never really enjoy. I mean, you have this beautiful house, mm-hmm. this beautiful family, this successful career. But then it must be hard because it's like, well, mm-hmm. when's enough? Enough.
When's enough? Yeah. But I think that a lot of people... suffer with that. Adele just came out with a new album. I don't know if anybody's heard that.
Oh, yeah, that 31.
But in one of the songs, there's a line that really resonated, and it was, and she's probably talking about her divorce and love and something totally different, but she mentioned how, you know, they tell us to go and do the sacrifice, but is there anybody who's truly ever satisfied? And it's something along those lines. And I remember my news director, when I decided to leave South Carolina to come up here, she's awesome. You know, one of the toughest bosses I've ever worked for, who really knew how to push you, almost like, you know, my mom. She said, okay, I see, because I was taking a traffic position to come up to work at WUSA. And she was like, you're such a great reporter. Even these investigative pieces, you're anchoring. Like, do you want to go and transition to do traffic? And I was like, look, it gets me, you know, and I took the line that has really helped me throughout my career, because my first job wasn't in TV. And it's like, does this move get me closer to where I want to be? And so maybe it's not what I want to be. You know, my first job was behind the scenes, but it got me in an area where I met people and I could test the waters and I can learn the ropes. And so I was like, well, you know, I don't know. Like, I don't know if something's ever going to be enough. Because she's like, you have so much here. And I just worry with you that it's like, it's just never enough. Like, you're always just pushing. And I guess it's another way of saying you're not living in the present and, you know, all that other stuff that none of us really do. And but I was like, well, on paper, like, it's me closer to my parents and at home. And I figure, I don't see, you know, I see everything as temporary. And I really do. If I want to go back to Sioux City, Iowa tomorrow, I could find a way. We could, right?
Absolutely.
And so I said, yeah, I'm going to go there. I'm going to test it out. I don't see myself staying in traffic forever. Is it the job I want to do? No, but the perks are is I'm going to learn how to do the green screen. I get to show some personality and I get to go home and I'm going back to, you know, D.C. It's a great market. And so, I think that that's part of it. Like, because I see it reflected in my children, like when, because I push and I get pushback and then I'm like, gosh, you know, because I remember how that felt. I remember how it felt. And I am such a, you know, my daughter's about to turn 11 tomorrow, right? A lot of milestones happening here.
Yes.
And what I did is I got her a journal and it's with her lovey on it. Like, she had drawn this green bear that she's had since from Starbucks. Since she was one, and it's what she sleeps with every night. And so I found a drawing of it and I turned it, you know, into a Shutterfly journal. And I wrote, you know, always tell your story, because in reality, there's so many things I would have forgotten, so many emotions and the way that I felt during then. Because it's easy to, it's like childbirth. You know, you're there, you're like dying, you're suffocating, you're bleeding, you're, you know, farting, you're doing all this stuff in front of people. And then
suddenly, 8 months later,
I mean, I thought my rear end hole had come out. I'm bent over, you know, and the nurse, I'm like, my butthole came out. She's like, that's a hemorrhoid, you know? And I'm like, oh my God. But you forget about these experiences.
Yeah.
I'm sure the nurses at Sibley didn't forget that. I'm sure they tell that story all the time. That girl on Fox 5, yeah, her butthole came out. But like, in all reality, it's, you forget about that pain. You forget about
when you were younger,
the insecurities and not being enough. And then you forget about the rage and the hate. And like, and so by going back and reading my journal, which I kept since I was 9.
Wow.
I was able to see those stories and see, you know, and so I just, so I think that that has really helped me come to terms with it. And it's also helped me as a mom be like, okay, the moment I start to see, I don't want to coddle my kids. I still want to be tough. I want them to know their standards. I want them to know that they can, you know, that honestly, like, rule number one, don't be number two. No, I'm kidding.
But it's hard. You learn so many great things from your parents, but then I think, you know, as time evolves, right, you see where they, you know, I mean, and people didn't know what they didn't know then, you know, I mean, your mom lived in Korea. She gave up everything to, you know, I'm sure she was terrified.
Yeah.
You know, she comes to this whole new country.
Doesn't
she has
know
to
a soul.
Learn English. You guys travel in the military. The military's a tough life. Where did you go to college?
George Mason University. Go Patriots!
You go to George Mason.
Uh-huh.
Now, in high school, did you always have this great personality? Were you class president?
Well,
you...
I was. but you know, I didn't go to prom. I didn't do any of that stuff. Like,
really? Why not?
Well, I moved here the middle of my junior year. So it was kind of just broke. So we lived in Korea for the majority, I would say, of my childhood because I was born there. My dad did 3 tours. The most recent, the last one was from 6th grade up until 10th grade. And then he got transferred out, you know, life of a military, an army brat. And we knew we were coming here, but they didn't have a house yet. So where I would spend our summers, a lot of times with South Carolina with our grandparents in Myrtle Beach. And so they were like, we're going to drop you kids off there and just start school there. So we did. I started school at Saucastie in North Myrtle Beach and did that for half a year until they got settled here. And then we moved up here and started mid-junior year at Herndon.
Okay, wait, was that the first time you came to America?
No, it was because we had done 3 different tours, like I'd done some, we lived on a military base for some of my elementary schooling in Austin, Texas.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so
you're
going back. But it's the first time as a teen, you know, as like a person, like, you know, someone trying to come into their own. And, you know, because at that age, it's different when you're in like 2nd, 3rd grade.
Yeah.
We're all friends. Everybody's coming to the birthday party. But then at that age, you come in and it's like you don't know anybody. You're in this new school.
It's so hard.
And there's cliques and there's this and that. And also a culture shock because I came from a place where the majority of people at my school were either Korean or half Korean like me, you know, the Caucasians and the black people and the Hispanics, like they were the minority. They were the minority. And so I went from a place where everybody understood the culture, so to speak, to where people were like, you know, are you Spanish? Are you Korean? I mean, even now, like I got asked at Starbucks if I was the help, if I took care of Bob. And I was like, yeah, I kind of gave birth to him, you know. And so because I don't know. Well, let's be honest. I mean, even Chin, when he came out of the womb, she was like, she looked at Robert and was like, I don't know, that's yours, you know. So he came out so white, blue eyes, you know, reddish tips. He looked like Ryan Seacrest. Like he came out and had like these frosted tips from like the 90s. But
he does look like Ryan Seacrest.
I know. Now he looks kind of like Prince Harry. But
you go to George Mason. When did you know you wanted to be in broadcasting? When did you know you wanted to be on TV?
You know, if you were to really go back to it, I was always fascinated with television because in Korea, we had AFKN, the Armed Forces Korean Network, which was the only English speaking channel back then where we would get pretty much the same stuff every day. You got the news, you got Entertainment Tonight, you got General Hospital and Jeopardy. I think Wheel of Fortune maybe. And so that was our connection to the mainland, which is the US, right? And so my dad would always start with the news in the morning and then we'd finish up at night. And the news was just important because as a military child, you know, you grow up, and this is in the diary as well. I mean, I wrote poems like when we went into Saudi Arabia and, you know, I wrote songs about like, because you live with this constant fear that every time your dad goes TDY or tour duty or is going to be deployed or that they're not coming back. And, and you know, my kids, we pray every night and I told them that I would fall asleep praying for, like, I would just fall asleep saying names, you know, I would just, whether it's like Jerry's dad, Stephanie's dad, you know, like I was praying for everybody.
For
I was like, they all got to come back. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, and so I just think that, you know, for me, that was the life of a military child. And so our connection to the outside world was the news. Like, this is how we knew what was going on. And that was intriguing. And then one of my girlfriends, I remember we did a field trip to AFKN, the news studio, and her father was the anchor of that. And I just thought it was so cool that, like, he was sitting there talking and then he would show up on the screen. Like, how do these people get into the TV? And so for me, and the fact that I always would enter poetry contests and writing contests and short stories, I think that that was all kind of building towards
part
it. And then
it,
I loved drama. I was always really, you know, a little quirky and different. I guess maybe I know that Glee and all that's made it like really glamorous and cool. But back in the day when you were like that wasn't that cool.
Yeah.
It just wasn't, you know. And I didn't have any specialty. Like I got like class clown, I think, in middle school. My dad was class clown too. So it runs in the family. And it was just I loved making people laugh. Like to me, you know, and I think part of it too was a coping mechanism. Yeah. And I think a lot of, I'm not a comedian, I love comedians and I love hearing their stories.
Yeah.
And to find out that they are just such dark, horrible people. No, I'm kidding.
but
it comes from a place of pain. But
comes from a place of pain.
But
yeah.
I think, you know, because if I was laughing, I wasn't, you know, thinking about all the other things that I want to be. I still wanted to be a model. I would look at Tiffany Amber Thiessen and be like, why am I not skinny? Why am I not this? Why am I not, you know? And it's just, it was.
It's amazing to hear you have all those things because you'd never know it from TV. You know, you exude confidence, but it's.
Yeah, it's all fake.
You graduate from college and where was your first television job?
First TV, I went out to LA where I worked at Entertainment Tonight. Still to this day, my
TV dad.
And
how did you get that gig?
So I got it through.
That's huge out of the gate.
I'm like, how long do you have? No, so at George Mason, and I'll just give you the truncated version. And this is also plays into whenever I do like any type of career speech or whatever, you know, find a way. I always say find a way because this was a time when everybody was, you know, the email chain was just getting hot. You know, everybody's like doing the email chains and everything. And I lied to get an internship for Elliot at Elliot in the Morning. And so me and Flounder. I still don't think that they even know. I remember they were asking for my papers to sign at the end. I was like, yeah, I'll bring them tomorrow. But I just wanted the experience. I was so hungry. Like I wanted the experience of seeing what the world of broadcasting was like. So I did like 5 internships. WSA was my first one. And one of the assignment editors, you know, rest in peace, Chris Houston, Karen Houston's husband, is amazing. He was like, you know, we carry ET. Would you ever want to intern at Entertainment Tonight? They do internships there. And I'm like, yeah. So I come back to Mason. They're like, no, we don't do. They just didn't do things that externally, you know, because email was you. Now we think like this wasn't that long ago, but now it's like FaceTime didn't exist. I mean, live streaming didn't exist. None of that. And so I came up with a pilot and I presented it to the dean of the school, or Mike Dickerson, who we just lost in the last year. And I said, look, why don't we do this thing where I go there, you can work with the coordinator, and I will email you every day and tell you what I've done and this and that. And we'll call it an externship, you know. And wow. So we did a pilot program. The newspaper wrote about it and everything. And so I got the green light and I went out to L.A. for the summer. I didn't have a car. I didn't have any money or anything. I had blisters. I mean, that's what I remember, is because I walked everywhere. And so I had blisters all over my feet because I'd take the big blue bus, and it was at odd hours of the night, but I was so, so hungry for it. And I worked hard. And Mark Steines, who became the host of that show.
Yes. Who were the big anchors? Was it like
John Bob
Tesh?
Cohen? You know, no, I wish. But yeah, I sat right next to, you know, Leonard Maltin. You know, he always gave us his, every Christmas you would get his Leonard Maltin's movie almanac. You knew what you were getting.
Yes, yes, and, yes. And who was the female? Who was like the woman? The
Julie,
star?
Mary Hart was there. Jan
Mary
Carl.
Hart.
Oh, Mary okay. Hart. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, Mary Hart.
And, and Jan Carl and Julie, I can't remember her last name. She was there for a while. But then Mark became the host after Bob Goen left. And he called me, you know, we kept in touch and I worked really hard when I was there. And he's like, look, my assistant is moving on to go work for Survivor, Mark Burnett. Because he's friends with Mark Burnett.
Oh my God.
So, okay. I mean, isn't this
the biggest,
crazy...
Just the biggest.
I know. So she was going to New Zealand. They were going to do a new show there. And so
Survivor.
I know. So Steph... Okay. So I ended up, you know, because I became friends with Steph. So Steph recommended me. So I was like, okay. He's like, listen, I come from local TV. Come out here. Learn the ropes. And then you can be on your way. So I come out there. You know, I work hard. I move in with Steph's boyfriend because I didn't have a place to stay. So it's like me, her, and his roommates. And you just did what you had to do, you know. And so I worked for him for 2 years. And then finally, I got my big break in Sioux City, Iowa. And I remember, I mean, I took a pay cut to take the job. I didn't have money to really drive or to go there to stay in a hotel overnight. So I remember driving, and it was cold in March. It was when the war started, when we bombed Iraq. And wow. I rented a U-Haul, put everything in there. Mark gave me like one of his big chairs that it was like a big couch chair thingy. I had that in the back of the U-Haul, pulled over in a hotel and slept in the parking lot in the U-Haul. It was so cool just because I couldn't get a room, you know, and then made it to the Midwest.
Oh my God.
And then eventually, you know, long story short, anchored, reported, you did it all, edited. I got a job as a waitress on the weekends, you know, because I was charging Arby's on a card. I mean, just because that's what you had to do, you know.
Yeah,
I was getting paid $18,000 a year.
Yeah.
And I just remember that was humbling. Like, it was crazy. And then from there, I just, I got the job in South Carolina because I could not do another Iowa winter. They were brutal. And then
you get offered at Channel 9, WUSA 9, mm-hmm. to be the traffic reporter, right?
Yeah.
So this is where I meet you, right? And you get this traffic gig. You know, your news director in South Carolina sort of thinks you're crazy to take this. You know, it's almost like a demotion. Mm-hmm. You do it anyway.
Oops,
but then how did you, because people really knew you. You were very inventive back in the day. You mm-hmm. you launched Oh My Goff, the blog. And I remember you out at every event. And you would write about people. You would write about the event. You'd write about restaurants.
It was like crowdsourcing.
It was so genius. Because it ended up getting you this terrific gig at NBC4 where mm-hmm. they really made you like anchor kind of personality.
Yeah.
So what was the idea? Did you just know blogging was going to be hot?
No. It was an outlet. I think, I mean, the real story behind that is I wanted to, in addition to doing traffic, and you know how unions are, right? So if I wasn't like in the union yet. But I knew... Like, look, I can anchor, I can report, I can do this stuff, and I have so much more to offer than just, you know, reading the maps, which was fine. It's a crucial part. I mean, that's why people tune in to morning TV here in Washington, is for your weather and your traffic. Never doubted that. Knew the role. But at the same time, wanted to, you know, spread the wings and also get back to what I was doing, you know? And so it was hard, though, because I remember I had the producer give me a read. We call it a VO, a voiceover. And so I read it. And then shortly after that, they were like, you can't do that. Like, you know, you're not in the union. You can't, you know, read blah, 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 blah. I mean, this is really what it comes down to.
Oh, wow.
And then I just remember feeling, again, trapped. And I think you know, people, I joke that I get around town, you know, like I've been everywhere. Except Channel 7, you're next. No. But
look out, Channel.
Watch out. But really, for me, when I really pinpoint drastic moves in my life, it's because I felt trapped or like in a cage or suffocated, or I didn't have, it didn't, you know, we talk about, you know, it should give you life. It should. And so I always know that that's my cue. Mm-hmm. And there's certain things that, you know, I'm willing to compromise with. But the moment that I feel like I'm backed into a corner, it's why I don't do well with like clocking in. I don't do well with, you know, because I know at heart, if I like something, I'm going to work on it. I'm going to be up at 5 a.m, you know, writing a pitch. I'm going to be, you know, messaging.
Yeah. So
I was like, oh my gosh, is this really what's going to be? Do I have to wait my contract out before I can have a voice in another realm? And so I was like, internet, you know, and my dad's a systems engineer. I grew up with, you know, always trying to stay ahead of the curve with that type of stuff. And we had pictures of the Commodore 64, the computer that, you know, it was like state of the art at the time. It's in our album, like a family member. So it was just, I was like, oh, right here, this is a loophole. Like I can, and I literally, and there's pictures of me with, I got, and I still have the MacBook. It weighs about 10 pounds. And I used Ustream. I don't even know if it's still around.
I remember that back in the day.
To do a live stream, aka Facebook Live, right? Yeah. Or a FaceTime. And
it was probably
people
pixelated.
Made fun of it. People, yeah. I mean, there's so many funny stories. Like I got called in for talking about Twitter on the air. Because I wasn't pushing, you know, WUSA's side. I was pushing them to this other site, Twitter. You know, and I tried to explain, look, you know, but it's in real time, you know, and traffic's in real time. Our website doesn't update that fast. It just doesn't. It probably still doesn't, you know. And so, and who goes to websites anymore, really, right? It's all about the app, right?
It's all about the
and
app.
It's all about, hey, I'm not going to you. Your information needs to come to me. So I just, so for me, that's where I started experiencing that. And then I was like, ooh, I can talk to people here. I can go out to these events. And even though we talk about hyper local, we talk about being in the corners of our community, but we all know at the end of the day, the same story you're seeing at 4 o'clock is just going to be rewritten for that's going to be your main meat and barring breaking news. And it's really hard to get. So for me, I was like, I can go out, I can do these things. I didn't have kids at the time. And I was young and flexible and youthful and so those were the days, but
you
get, so
you were at NBC 4 for 9 years. So
seven
years. Did they recruit you, or did you, or you kind of had that itch and you were like, I've had my time at USA 9. I'm going to be in a box. I've got to go.
No, I actually didn't go the first time that they recruited me.
Wow.
I resigned because we cut a deal where I would be, you know, a fill-in anchor and I could still have my franchise. Whereas if I had gone to NBC the first time, it wasn't guaranteed I wouldn't be doing just reporting and try, you know, and so, I didn't go the first time. And then I was ready, the second time and I was glad I did because it was great. It was good to get back to what I was used to doing. And plus, you know, it was NBC4.
Yeah,
it was Jim Vance and all of that. And it's for people that grew up around here, which I still consider this a big part of my home, finishing up high school. And these are the people, you know, my sisters live here, my parents, they know. So that was just, it became a no brainer.
And then, okay, so you're there 7 years. And did you have that itch again when you were, it was like you were ready.
Yeah.
You needed to express yourself. And NBC4, I mean, let's face it, right? They kind of have more of a serious news delivery. They don't really want you to have personality. Uh-huh. You know, and so you end up coming here to Fox 5. How many years has it been here at Fox?
God, I don't know. With COVID, it's like feels like forever. But I came in 2019.
How did
it's almost 2 years,
feel? Because like you just, I've known you anyway, right? From your personality.
Yeah.
But how did it feel to come to a station like where suddenly you could have an opinion, you could be yourself? And
it was scary.
Apparently you could wear what you wanted.
I mean,
you know,
can you pull the tape of like the first like it or not I did?
Oh, we should.
I'm still kind of like that. Like it was weird because you come from a place where, you know, everything is based off of, and most TV stations are like this, but based off of research, this and consultants and
By the way, you have a lot of experience. What's your thoughts on research and consulting? You think that they're it's full of BS, or you because we're going to talk about chemistry, because you're good at playing it with people on shows and having chemistry, but it's very hard. You kind of get lucky to have chemistry, really.
Yes.
You can't force it. And yet all these consultants in radio and television ever really love, they want the
lean into the camera.
Yeah.
Eye contact.
Yeah, what do people...
Lose the tie. Be more relatable. Yeah.
Do you think any of that shit means anything?
I think it's important to... because then it can go the other way. Like, and I'm the first to admit, like, if you don't rein me in, I can go the other way. Like, because... I just think that people, when it's just like you push a little farther, you push a little, it's our human nature,
right?
I think there is something to be said about sticking to brand, right? And remembering that and that was told to me early on, like, yeah, you kind of have a brand. We all do, right? You know, anybody who has social media is their own brand, right? But you're not bigger than ours. And that was made very clear. I mean, that was said, and I get it. I get it. And I think that what works with Fox is because there was some pushback. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I know this is going on Fox, but there's pushback. I think that it's just only natural for people that work for a company. You know, the idea of collaborating is hard because the dynamic always is like, okay, we tell you what to do, you do it, and you perform well, you get more things. You know, it's just like that's how the balance works. So it's hard when you bring something new and you say, look, I want to do this. I want to create this content. I want you to trust me. I want to share. Like, it's not just going to be my name, but yours. Like, why can't we collab? You know, and I think that that's just kind of new to the old model of news. And with Fox, I will say it was very jarring to come in and realize, you know, I can kind of shed some more light on a story, or I can give my opinion, like it or not. That's what we do.
Yeah.
And usually it's more lighthearted things, but there's some serious stuff that comes out. Whereas I would have, you know, played it safe. There's many times, and there were times that I didn't play it safe, or I just there and. It's a joke in the newsroom that I forget I'm on TV sometimes, but I really sometimes do. And sometimes, like, thoughts will just come out. They don't even make sense because I'm working things out. And, you know, we're up against the clock. And
is that where they try to rein you in when they're like,
oh, yeah, or they'll just cut the mic, or they'll just go out of it. And it's just, I have trouble, like, separating that. Whereas, like, before I was very like I was thinking almost more about like what not to say.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Then
you know,
just read the glass and you know get to the next thing. And I think the only time I didn't feel that way is if I was anchoring with Jim Vance, because I knew they wouldn't fuck with him.
I was gonna say anything goes with Jim. Could do anything.
Yeah, yeah. It was like he could just
he had the golden handcuffs.
Yeah, he could kill stories on the fly. You know, like he never really read the prompter, like anything that was in there. You know, like he just kind of.
Oh my God, he was such a legend. Okay, before we talk about chemistry, but what was he like as a person? I mean, you know, for some people listening to this, I mean, sadly may not know who he is, but you know, Jim Vance, longtime legendary, you know, anchor. Mm-hmm. And you know, Jim was like the last of the breed that would make $2 million a year, $3 million a year in our
business. Work 4 days a week, you know, not
the good
do one show a day.
The good money. What was he like as a human being?
I didn't know Jim Vance like a lot of people know him, you know, the people that are close with him. But what I did know about him is that he took the time when he would run into me in the hallways to say, when I was working nights and, you know, Robert didn't live here because my husband didn't live here up until a couple of years ago because he worked in South Carolina. And he would say, how are those babies? You know, and then and it was like, I don't know if he fucking cared, but I think he did. And the fact that he would sit there and listen, and then he would tell me something about how he used to, you know, his kids and what he missed. The fact that he took time when he didn't have to. I mean, this is Jim Vance who literally, I think, 1 year said, I'm taking the year off from like charities and stuff. You know, like basically I'm not doing anything. I'm taking the year off. And like he could do that. Right. I mean, rightfully
okay.
So he's like, I'm going to go ride my bike. But he, you know, we would go to lunch and then he would tell me stories and just how it used to be. And then what his dream, his last, you know, the last stories that he would want to do, you know, before he retires. And he kept saying, I'm going to retire. And he didn't, you know. And then, of course, you know, we lost him and he got sick. But he would, I remember, you know, we all do like a bunch of events a lot.
Oh,
and
sure, a lot
and
of
we always hate asking our coworkers, please come. Can you show up? Can you support? And I remember I just said, you know, yeah, I'm seeing this thing. It's downtown at a furniture store. And if you can go, it'd be great. And of course, like nobody really went. Like nobody ever goes
yeah,
to
everyone
that
was
stuff.
Like, oh,
like,
yeah, I'll
sorry, I gotta work, you know. Oh my God, baby's sick. Oh God, you know, my crotch itches. Like there's always something. I wish maybe next year. And I remember like standing at the podium and then it's like the freaking Red Sea parted. He was wearing his hat, the doors opened, and it was like, oh, like people just like moved and he walked in and he literally, I didn't get to say, you know, thanks to him because he waited for me to finish speaking. Then he left and went back to like work, but he showed up.
Wow.
That's the thing. I'm like, you know, he showed up and I feel like he showed up to things that he cared about. You know, if you took the time to get to know him and he was also so cool. I mean, I have and nobody's probably ever seen it. I have the Snapchat. One time I was anchoring with him and Doug Cameron was doing the weather and I would do these Facebook lives and sometimes he'd be in a bad mood. He'd be like throwing chairs and shit. And I'd be like, okay, we're, you know, camera on me. And then he'd be like, rah, rah, rah. But he would still play. And that was the thing. Vance wanted you to play on the air. And if you didn't give it back to him, that's the one thing I learned about him is, you know, he threw to you and he said something and you didn't volley that back. He'd be like, come on, man, play. Like, just this, that's Caccini. That's chemistry. That's relationships. That's, you know, knowing what you're doing, not thinking about what you're going to say next or do. And I remember I was like, this is called Snapchat. And so literally while Doug's doing the weather, I put a filter on him. And it's that one that makes your teeth really big and your eyes. And I'm like, ah! And he about fell out of his chair, Sarah. He was like, oh, my God. And then every time he talked, it came bigger and bigger and bigger. And then he was like, and the way he laughed when he really laughed hard was like, it's like this almost like breathless. Like, and then you can hear Doug. He's like, what are y'all doing over there? Like, this is like during the newscast. And I'm like, and it's still my favorite memory because, and then he did a little dancing because he was not, you know, there's a lot of people that are really, they don't want to embrace where this is going. They don't want to try stuff. And he was always up for it and he enjoyed it and he wanted to learn. And he's like, and to me, he had every right to be like, no, that's stupid, or to act like a real serious anchor. Like, we don't have time for that. Because I've worked with people like that where they're like, why is she, you know, FaceTime, da, 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 you know, and it's just like, yo, Ted Baxter, chill out, sit down, okay? Like, it's not that serious. It's just the news. And that was the one thing he would say. It's like, you know, people need to learn how to take a fucking joke. They need to know that, like, don't take yourself so seriously that you're losing out on life. And I think with him, you know, when he's on the set, like, he could talk however long he wants. Like he could miss his cues. And you were protected. There was a certain, so when we lost him, there was this feeling of, I mean, I felt it. I was like, God, I always felt like Vance had my back, you know? And he told me when I got hired there, cause it was controversial, I think, because they had lost someone who was a veteran journalist. And I mean, there was like online movements like to, you know, bring them back. Yeah. You know, it's just, I mean, I feel
Susan
like,
Kidd.
Well, I don't even remember who it was, but and he was like, you know, I told them when they hired you, like, are you just bringing her in because she's a pretty face? Because, you know, just pretty faces, you can't just be a pretty face in Washington.
Doesn't work.
And he was just very upfront with me. And it was about like, okay, you got to come here, prove yourself, win the room. And there was a certain level of respect, you know. And so he was still serious. And he still cared. And I think that's what's lacking in a lot of newsrooms. Like, he was a leader.
Yeah, he cared
and he
you,
cared
yes.
about setting you up to succeed. Mm-hmm. And how often do you find people going out of their way to make sure, you know, that their house is going to be all right, that their people are getting, he knows certain people need work.
It's really hard because it's a very selfish business in a lot of ways. And you have to really cultivate. It's rare to find somebody that's that big, that has, like you said, the protection, the power to then help other people, right?
And when I say that he was flawed, because I'm sure somebody, I mean, I don't want someone to clip
shit. No.
So what I mean by that is that his flaws were so transparent. And I talk about human people, like so many of us like put on a good face and we smile. And he did for a long time, too. You know, he's shared the story. I mean, he contemplated suicide. Like, he also did not feel like he was good enough. He did not feel he deserved everything at one point.
God, that's shocking.
And needed the affirmation that everybody else did, you know, needed that. And he's talked about in the past. And it's like, and then, you know, you get to a point where it's like you have only so many F's to give. And but I think that all of that is what helped him connect with so many of us that were going through these same things, yeah, that were, you know, being, you know, taken through the ringer, and just and it was comforting to know, like, yeah, that. Yeah.
We've been ending these with kind of rapid fire. So tell me this. Your husband, Robert, is there anything he says you can't talk about? Because, girl, you mentioned it all. You put him all on social media. You've inspired me. I always used to say, I would tell my co-host.
The size of his. No.
Let's hear. Ooh, what is Robert's size?
It is. You can bleep that out. No, I'm kidding.
Robert's a tall man.
I'm just kidding. 6'2".
And he's got big hands.
Yeah. Big feet. Pushing a 13 and a half. No, I'm kidding.
Tell us really quick how you met Rob. Robert was on a date with another woman.
No, I was on a date. I was on a date with another man. Oh. Yeah. And we were in a bar. I already knew kind of who he was. And he was just such a fun, like, he just looked really happy. I remember he was really happy and cute. And like the girls that I was hanging out, they called him Dr. Bob, even though he doesn't even go by Bob. But they were like, you know, he's like a dentist and he's single and he's da da da.
And you were like, Chen will love
this. Yes, cha-ching, cha-ching, let me see those hands. And then I had talked to him a couple other times, but then I, you know, it's like I had some libations and, you know, I think that I just got
a
little
bold.
But I was really bold, you know, because I had come off a really, like, terrible breakup. Like, the guy that I thought I was going to marry, you know. There was a part of me that was, like, woman scorned and, like, angry. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to take my shot, like, everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I actually think back and I'm like, God, I was kind of a horrible person to some people. Because, you know, when you think back to it, that's why I think these people that, like, two-time people and, like, they do that guilt does eventually come back to you.
Yeah. It always comes back.
I mean,
tell us this. How do you have some famous friends? So Alex Smith, you know, the former football mm-hmm. player, you're very close with he and his wife. How mm-hmm. do you maintain famous friendships and, you know, have a podcast? And because I talk shit about everyone. This is why I have zero
I know.
Friends.
Yeah. Well, I just don't talk shit about my friend. No, I'm kidding. You know what? I don't.
It's terrible. I talk about everybody.
Yeah. I just don't. I don't talk about it. Like, I really don't. And it's a hard thing. And I'd be lying if I said that there weren't, you know, uncomfortable situations sometimes, because we work in news. And if they know that you have certain people that you are connected with, you're the first person they call to say, hey, you want to see if they want to talk. And it's like, I think that there is a certain level of because you don't want to violate, you know, trust. Right.
Please.
And no matter how you ask for it, like, it seems like you just want an interview. You want this and that. And so I just think that there's I've had to be really, really careful with it. And
it is so hard because you always feel like no matter how long the friendship, the minute you ask, mm-hmm. it's like, oh, are you doing it just because I'm so
well? And then I also feel like if they want to, and if they're really, you know, some people that I know that are, like, you know, next level, like, you know, we have, like, our reality star friends, and then we have people that are nationally known, internet, whatever. If they really want to come and talk to me over going to, you know, Good Morning America or Today's Show, then they'll do that.
Yeah.
Like, you know, but I can't be in a position to say, just talk to me and talk to me only and not 60 minutes or this and that. Like, I just have never taken that. I just really feel like they know, you know, the voice that I could give them.
Yep.
And it's a mutual thing. And then in the meantime, I work really hard trying to get other interviews, you know, behind the scenes. And a lot of them do take a lot of time to cultivate and to build that trust. And so when you invest trust, and I'm not speaking to the Smiths because that's totally different, because we were friends before, like, any of that, you know, the horrible accident and all that happened. I kind of know my limits because they're all different.
That's good.
You know?
That's a talent in itself.
Yeah. And then I have friends that are like, because they have to, and you probably know this, the playing field has to be level. Like, they're like, well, you have to go through this person or this person, and then they will, you know,
approve it.
Yeah. So that they don't have to be burdened with it, because you have to imagine they get asks
all the time,
nonstop.
All the time.
Yeah. So
tell us how many costumes you think you own.
I couldn't tell you that.
Do you think?
But I could show you.
Do you think it's 250?
I don't know because they can. They could be. You know, it's hard to say because all of them are like packed into bins, and then we have the outside. I mean, I can show you, and you can maybe get because I think people have this idea. They're like, oh my God, your place. Well, it is kind of a mess, but we're under construction right now. But they're like, where do you store all this stuff? You know, and I think that's like a big question. You know, I get it every time. Like, and they're like, what you have? You know, the other day it was one of our coworkers' birthday, and she's a big Swiftie, and you know, they came out with Red, you know, Taylor's version. And so during break, I was like, shoot, you know, I have this thing at
work. You're like,
work.
Oh, I got a whole Taylor Swift ensemble.
Well, yeah. So, well, but I really didn't. So I came down. I was like, I'm going to go out and, you know, eat real quick and come back before the 10. And I have this thing now that I do. I bought those karaoke mics and I leave them at my desk and I do Motivational Monday and, you know, Tough Talk Tuesday and stuff. So I was like, I'm going to serenade her, you know, and I'm going to sing All Too Well. Because they were literally crying like just hours before watching that 13-minute, the short movie that Taylor had put out. And I was like, I'm going to go put on a camel coat. I'm going to get like one of those like caps. But I didn't have a Taylor wig. And I came in here and I'm like, and Adora's trying to help me. And I'm like, I got to go. So then I put Ren's Alice in Wonderland wig on. And Adora's like, way too yellow, way too yellow. So then I moved to her Christina Applegate, her Kelly Bundy wig. No, too yellow. She's like, do the dog, the mullet. And I can show you a picture. So I have two different mullets. No, I have three because I had Tiger King too. And I do it. And she's like, okay. And I was like, we can cut it. And we put it on. But then I put the cap on. She's like, no, you don't even need to cut it. So I went in there. And then so it was really funny after I did my serenade and I took the hat off. And it was like I was all of a sudden Dog the Bounty Hunter. You know, so it's like you can use these things. So it's hard to say how many costumes because if you really think about it, you can create anybody.
You
so.
Have it all. Final question. What's been the quirkiest, funniest, best interview moment on television? You know, you've had so many good ones. I mean, I remember you covering the Super Bowl 2 years ago. It was hysterical.
Yeah, that was fun.
But, you know, you will go up to anyone. I mean, have you, like,
yeah.
Dolly Parton? Who? If you had a quirky moment, I mean, I don't know. You know, you'd be shooting dollar bills out of your butthole. I mean, you know, you'd do
well,
it.
I think, yeah. I mean, and guess what? Not everything lands, right? I mean, you see, hey, we
don't like it or not.
we curate this stuff, right? So, I will say, because we all know.
Oh, I love it when it doesn't land.
I know nothing about baseball, but yet I'm sent to cover the World Series. I know nothing about football to the point where my husband and I would give our Gamecock tickets up because I would fall asleep like inside the, you know, I drink too much and fall asleep. And he's like, you're wasting the seat, you know, in the zone. Like, and then he'd have to take me home early. Like but they sent me there because I try to find the people and the stories. And I'm really good at researching and taking in a bunch of information. And I think part of it not knowing is what has helped me because you don't know what you don't know. And so if you sound stupid or look stupid, well, okay, well, it's funny because you really did. You're not trying, right? You know, you're just doing whatever. So I think when I went to when I went to the Super Bowl, I mean, I didn't know who Andy Reid was, but
and
Adam, who's one of our editors we used to work with, he was like, well, you know, he after winning, he's going to eat a cheeseburger and this and that. And you should dress up like him. There's an Andy Reid lookalike. And I was like, I like to dress up like people. So, you know, sure enough, like I got the whole getup. And I think questioning him, getting to go to the Super Bowl, you know, the night where they roll out all the players and you get to talk to all the stars and, you know, Patrick Mahomes, you know, he signed my shoes and, you know, Jimmy G, you know, I got to ask him what it's like to be the best looking, you know, quarterback in the league and all the stuff, you know, just being stupid. But Andy Reid, the fact that, you know, he just started laughing and he answered.
Oh, he loved it. That was
And I asked him if he
moment.
Liked, you know, if he preferred his buns like firm or soft and just played along. And then to me, that was like because
it was Angie Goff being Angie Goff. It was
Angie Reid. Right. Yeah. And then look back at it and be like, okay, 24 hours ago, I did not know who this man was. And I just pulled this off and people are laughing. And now I feel a connection to Andy Reid. Like, I really feel like he would like to hang out with me. You know, like I just
did.
And now I follow stuff that he does. And it's just so I got something out of that as well. And so I think doing stuff like that whole experience, it was exhausting. It was hard. We didn't sleep. Covering the royal weddings, stalking, you know, Prince Harry. I mean, you see this picture that shows how much he loves me. Look at him. Yeah, that was on TMZ.
I love it.
I was just going nuts. I'm like, I'm your one. It's your one night. You know, you don't have to do it. So I still think that his body language says he wants me. Don't you think? And I love the fact that the future King of England is right behind him and nobody gives a flying F about freaking Prince William. I was in between both of them and they were like, hooray. So
that was the moment, though, the Andy Reid moment. I love moments like that in your career because it just shows you if you feel it.
That was a good one. Yeah, I'm sure there's more. I just, you know, haven't had enough coffee.
Look, I could talk to you for 2 hours, but the construction's starting back up at your house. Can you hear it? Work. I think you got a call to take. Where can people? Everybody can see you, of course, Monday through Friday, Fox 5. You're for the 4 p.m. Mm-hmm. But you're also on at the 10
and 6
and the 6,
7, 8, 9. No, 4, 6. Yeah, social media, Oh My Goff on Instagram, The Oh My Goff Show on TikTok.
I love
it. The podcast is going to be dropping a new season soon. But the old ones are just as good because, you know, they're all shot like evergreen. They're all good and fun. So that's on YouTube as well as, where else should we put those? Oh, Apple Podcasts.
Everywhere.
Yeah, but you can watch them. And then the 10 o'clock news, you can...
And here she is.
There's Chin. I got to tell Mom I love her or she won't, you know.
She'll be pissed.
So
Angie Goff, it was such a treat. Thank you so
awesome.
Much. Amazing.